Bruce Almighty Podcast.
All right, so apparently I need to switch it up. It's okay to admit when you've been wrong about your creative process. After I listened to previous episodes, after I read some feedback in the emails, I realized my podcasts are not what you guys want to hear. Like, you don't want serious Bruce. You don't want me calm, talking smart and shit. I think you want dumbass Bruce, and I'm okay bringing you dumbass Bruce. It's a lot easier. I think I find a way to where I don't need a co-host just yet, and I can bring some entertaining content, because at the end of the day, that's all you fucking want. Entertaining content, shit to talk about at work, shit to talk about with your friends. Hey, I'll bring you that shit. So I'm going to bring you guys some current news that matters, and, you know, I'm going to switch up the format a little bit. I'm going to try something new today, and we're going to see how it goes. So apparently Twitter was on fire yesterday. I looked at Twitter. Five of the trending topics were Marvel related. Apparently there was Comic-Con in San Diego. All the nerds came out in droves. Marvel had a lot of big announcements. One of the most notably was Blade being remade with somebody other than Wesley Snipes. Yes, somebody other than Wesley Snipes.
What the fuck?
I didn't know how I felt about it. I love Wesley Snipes as Blade. It's one of those cult classics. You don't want him to fuck with the cult classics. You know what I mean? You want it to stay the same. But at the same time, you know, I could never picture another person playing Blade other than Wesley Snipes. Just like we can never picture anybody other than Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine. Or anybody other than Ryan Reynolds playing Deadpool. But when they told me who was playing Wesley Snipes, I mean Blade, it was kind of on purpose. I had to admit, it's a pretty good choice. Mahershala Ali is the new Blade in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And he has been great in everything I've seen him in. For me, most notably, was when he played the villain Cottonmouth in Luke Cage's Season 1 on Netflix series. About one of the Marvel superheroes, Luke Cage. He was great. He was probably the driving force to Season 1's success. Season 2 didn't do so great, and I think the absence of such a great character of Cottonmouth was a big part of that. He was also great in Moonlight, won a lot of awards, at least I think it did. I think if anybody could play Blade, it's this guy. So while we're on Marvel news, Marvel also announced it's going to be releasing 10 projects over the next 2 years, and introducing Phase 4 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So you ask yourself, why is this washed-up ex-convict bringing me comic book nerd news? Well, for one motherfucking second, I'm a comic book nerd. A bit of a thug, but I'm still a nerd. I've been getting a lot of requests for content like this, and who am I to not give the people what they want or what they think they want? Because as soon as y'all realize I suck at this kind of content, you will never ask me again for no dumb shit like this again. Okay, but since you asked for it, I'm here. So you're going to get, you know, exactly what you've been asking for. And, some of the 10 projects Marvel discussed at Comic-Con somewhere in California, I think San Diego, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness with the Scarlet Witch chick in it. I don't know her name, but she's in it apparently, and they're selling it as a horror movie. I've seen in one of the ads for the promos on Twitter was it's going to be Marvel's first horror movie, which isn't true because Blade to me is considered somewhat of a horror movie. Anyways, there's that. I am excited about the new Doctor Strange. The weird one that caught me off guard is Natalie Portman is going to be a female version of Thor, because, you know, everybody wanted a female Thor, right? Am I right? Did everybody want that? First, they make Thor a fat alcoholic gamer who redeems himself in Endgame only to bring Thor in as a woman because, you know, hey, why not? And before you super nerds crucify me and tell me there was a female Thor storyline in the comics, I'm aware. I just found out on Twitter, so before I get upset about it, I'll give it a chance to see if it's good or not. You know what my takeaway from all this is creators got to be smoking the best weed in the universe. You know, they sit in a room, they say to themselves, you know what? What if Thor was a woman? What if the Little Mermaid was a black queen? Somebody in that writing room has to be high as fuck. Also, they talked about the Eternals, which I literally know nothing about. So I'm just going to wait and see what it's all about. Apparently, Loki is going to have a show. Hawkeye and is going to have a show with the Winter Soldier. Scarlet Witch show. Few other shows I can't recall, but apparently when Marvel's starting this whole streaming service, a lot of shows coming out, a lot of movies coming out, so I'm excited to give it up for Marvel. Marvel never seems to let me down, ever. Okay, so for my first segment of Real Fake News, I was looking long and hard. And I said, okay, what's the first segment going to be? And then I ran across a headline I never thought I'd see in a million years. And it was on a Real News website. It was on CNN. And it never have I ever thought I would read a news article that says Donald Trump is in talks with the Swedish prime minister about ASAP Rocky's incarceration in Swedish jail, his treatment, his release. He's trying to help his release or his treatment in jail. I don't know what the hell that fucking cheese doodle is doing. But anyway, what's hilarious about this to me is that if Donald Trump is trying to distract us from his racist shit on Twitter by trying to help a rapper, or let's just say it for what it is, he wants to be able to say, hey, I helped a black guy. A black guy that recently said he did not give a shit about the black agenda. He didn't care. He thought Black Lives Matter was dumb and it was a bandwagon thing. You know, this guy's fucking ignorant as shit. And he, you know, definitely is not somebody that I want to see incarcerated or see locked up. But if Donald Trump is going to help anybody, it's that guy. Kanye West is probably pulling the puppet strings on this, or should I? I think from now on I'm going to call him Kanye Kardashian, because I think in the end, Kim Kardashian is the one with the brains pulling the puppet strings and getting Donald Trump to move on this. I think that's, you know, I think Donald Trump thinks he can earn some popularity points by working with Kim Kardashian and Kanye West on stuff, and you know, that's all fine and dandy, but let's call it for what it is. Donald Trump is fucking pandering to a certain demographic. He's thinking he's trying to paint himself and say, look, I'm not racist because look, I did this, right? But don't think about all the other crazy shit I do, like lock little immigrant kids in cages. Let's remember, I tried to help ASAP Rocky get out of jail. You know, that's fucking nuts.
He's going to do this to me because I'm not an agent, bro. He got his ass cooked.
Adrian, you didn't go down like that, huh?
He got cooked.
Are you surprised?
I told everybody he was going to get cooked. Shit. That motherfucker was gambling with me at 4 in the morning. I had to kick him out the casino.
Who was gambling with you?
Thurman. Two nights in a row.
No.
Stupid. Hey, listen. He was with 6 or 8 niggas. I said, all y'all some bitch-ass niggas, because y'all letting him come down here and he got the biggest fight of his life. Wow. He could change your life, all y'all life, and y'all got him right here gambling? Mm. Y'all are some bitch-ass niggas.
Mm. What did he have in that fight when he came back?
He got cooked. Mm. I don't care about that. He got cooked.
What's that?
He almost wanted to quit, too.
Ooh. I seen
some quit in him, too.
Yeah. AB, yeah. What's next for you?
Yeah. Huh?
What's next for you?
I'm gonna beat the shit out of Shane, boy. Where you at?
Shane? Hey, I'm in Red Cash?
Yeah. I got some easy money coming up, man.
Easy money?
I'm running to the bank, you hear me?
Okay, so this is my sporting news. Manny Pacquiao just beat the shit out of that undefeated guy, Thurman. Remember, Manny Pacquiao was 40 years old. And I think Adrian Broner just gave us the reason why. I'm willing to bet anything that Thurman Thomas, or whatever his name, Thurman, whatever, not Thurman Thomas, but Thurman the Boxer was in Adrian Broner's pockets in this casino. Because people say that kind of shit when they lose gambling. They get salty. I'm not surprised. Anyways, I'm surprised that Thurman's lack of respect for the preparation process in a professional boxing match is not being talked about as much as it should be. Thurman really thought he was going to work that old man.
Oh, he was fast. He was strong. You know, the short steps. You know, everything that Manny Pacquiao always has been, you know, he has a lot of it still left in him. I felt like, you know, I was going to give him a pressing fight, you know, even though he knocked me down. I didn't care. I wanted to be in his face. I felt like he was getting a little bit tired in the later rounds. But he does train hard. You know, he trains hard. He kept his hands up. He's been in so many wars that now he knows what not to do.
So, yeah, congratulations to Manny Pacquiao, a.k.a. Mr. Pac-Man. Can we stop with the Mayweather-Pacquiao rematch talk, please? Don't nobody want to see that shit. Okay, so this has been my little test run with the new format. Let me know if you like it. Follow me on social media, at Mr. Bruce Almighty. That's on Twitter, Instagram, all that. I'm pretty sure I need to start a social media profile for the Bruce Almighty podcast, so stay tuned for that. Also, I love getting the feedback I've been getting via email, BruceAlmightyPodcast@gmail.com. I love hearing your feedback, advice, etc. Thanks for tuning in. Peace out, bitch. Check, bitch! Anyways, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Bruce Almighty Podcast. I don't know. What makes it?
I don't know. It's just funny. Just say it.
Podcast?
Just do it how you're doing it, man.
Because we're just talking shit. Okay, first and foremost, I want to make a disclaimer. Do not take anything you hear on here too serious. It ain't that serious, folks. Fucking podcast, entertainment while you're driving, shitting, whatever you're doing, right? You may want to masturbate to the sultry sounds of what you hear. I have a good phone sex voice.
It's you. It's all you.
It is me. All right. Anyways, let me introduce my new co-host, Lola the Nightmare.
Long time listener, first time co-host.
First time co-host. I don't know, depending on how the day goes, might be last time co-host, because she might end up in a trunk. Anyways, if you're a member of the Almighty Psychos, the Almighty's Army of Psychos, make sure you join us on Discord, all that, social media, and, you know, I actually made a Twitter for the Bruce Almighty Podcast.
Hasn't followed me yet.
I haven't used it yet because I'm not good at this shit. I haven't, like, the things I should be doing to make this podcast successful, I haven't started doing it yet. So
I realize that now.
Like I need help, folks.
You need an alarm clock for one.
I do, and because every time you call me, I'm sleeping in too late, and I'm usually
but apparently up really if I offer early. Tacos, your ass is up.
Yeah, you said tacos, I was up. If you want to follow that, it's Podcast Bruce. Or, wait, I made a couple of them, and I didn't know which name I wanted
to use. This man right here.
Yeah.
Unprepared.
Unprepared. Story of my life.
Like all men.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
What do they call it? If it's misogynistic for men, what is it for women?
Is it something I should know?
Yeah, something you said. You just said, oh, it's all men are like that. That's very, you're generalizing us.
I definitely didn't.
Cancel culture is coming for you. In defense of men.
I did not.
That's.
You have no proof.
I do. Anyways, look, let's keep it all the way 100. Like, I don't know what the fuck this podcast is going to be. I wanted it to be a true crime comedy podcast, and we might just be here with the vibes, talking a little shit. It's a pod-e-cast, so you don't know what you're going to get. Like,
something entertaining.
Something to entertain you idiots. Well, I don't want to call them listeners idiots, because I think they're pretty smart if they listen to us, but... If you appreciate our sense of humor, our take on stuff in the world, you know, things I don't really want to comment on or right now is I wasn't going to say anything about Kobe, but some things I just want to say rest in peace, Kobe, because right now it's pretty emotional for me. Condolences to his family. I don't want this going to a dark place early in the podcast. That's not the direction I want to go. But that's been the heaviest thing on my mind, and if this is your first time listening, and if we put this out in a timely fashion, that I hope.
You might hear this in a month from now.
Yeah, it might. They'll be like, man, that was months ago. No, like, we're really trying to do this right, so I'm trying to record properly. If the audio quality isn't up to par, hey, if you guys listen, give me them stream numbers. We can afford some really good equipment.
We're doing this for y'all at the end of the day.
Yes, yes, yes. All right. We need a, you know, let's be honest, it comes down to the money, all right? Comes down to the money. And we're not going to ask any of you for a dime. You know what you can do to help us? Share this shit. Tell your friends. Anyways.
Make them give us dimes.
Yeah, make us give them dimes. No, if we get listeners, we get dimes. Dimes. Literally dimes.
I just go cry on a bag of money.
You know.
I just go cry on a bag of money.
Well, I love this little
thing. You know what I'm saying?
Shut up. Nobody asked you, all right? Anyways, welcome. Let's see. We want to start. I don't want to just jump into the topic, because what if we get into the topic and we don't like it? We're like, fuck that shit. We wasted 2 hours talking about some shit.
I feel like we wasted 2 hours talking about nothing, though.
We already done that. Like, I swear to God, if we were recording this from the moment that she got here, it may have been more entertaining, because the shit we talk about when the microphone's turned off.
That barbershop talks a lot better.
Yeah. Anyways, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Okay, one more time for the kids at home, just in case.
Welcome. Yeah, I feel like I should say welcome.
Welcome.
Because this is the first episode of season 2 of the Bruce Almighty podcast.
And also, you're welcome.
Yes. All right. So, we want to do this thing. It's called Booze Clues. We're going to tell... I love true crime. I don't know about you. It's like, that is my jam, from documentaries to podcasts to
my lady jam.
You know, almost all the media that I watch is true crime related. I love gangster movies.
When I can't find shit to watch, I'm watching true crime.
Documentaries about how they're smuggling drugs into the country. Serial killers. Like, that's my shit.
Real life psychological thrillers, man.
Yeah, and the thing that's great, in my lifetime, I've lived some of the shit that I see in those. But I still watch other people's shit.
Do you ever just watch it and you're like, man, how could that ever happen? And you think about it and you're like, oh yeah, that's how.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, this is also a very non-judgmental podcast. We don't have, we're not trying to put morals and values on anybody. Listen to the shit and realize this is entertainment. Like, we're living in a time where everybody gets fucking offended, right? Sometimes you should get offended.
Fake offended. Fake real offended.
Yeah, fake offended. Real offended. Whatever. Anyways, this is not just you're safe here. I want you to know you're safe. You say what the fuck you want, because guess what I can do? I can edit it out later.
This is your safe place.
This is your safe. We can edit it later, okay? If I say edit point, write whatever number you see down here, okay? Edit point. All right. I was, for a minute, I didn't know what story I wanted to do first. I didn't know who, because, like, when it comes to true crime, you can go forever and find awesome stories to talk about.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I don't know about you, but I've always been interested in the street politics of Harlem. I've never stepped foot in New York. I love Mace. I love Cameron. I don't know. I started there. But, like, when it came to movies and all that, like, Harlem was always legendary in these stories. And I mean, I know people from Harlem.
Every kind of movie about crime has some foot in Harlem.
Somehow, some way, there's all. It's like Kevin Something Harlem is like the Kevin Bacon of the crime world.
Yeah, you know, Seven Spaces, Kevin Bacon.
Yes, it all ties back to Harlem. Anyways, well, I ran across this story. I'm watching. This is how it happened. I'm watching a movie called Hoodlum, and it was about Bumpy Johnson. I started watching this again because I was watching Forrest Whitaker's Godfather of Harlem. That show is amazing, and it's the story of Bumpy Johnson, who was pretty much the kingpin of Harlem. He ran Harlem. He was like, and the thing he was so well known for is white gangsters respected and feared him. He lived by the same, he believed the same codes they did.
He looked like such a nice old man, though.
Yeah, but if you read his criminal record, he was not a nice old man. Yeah,
he looked like such a sweetheart.
You know what he looks like? He kind of looks like Benson.
Philia.
He kind of looked like Benson. Anyways, when... Or what's Olivia Pope's dad's name?
Oh, shoot. Google?
What was his name? Oh, Jesus. Man, he was amazing in Scandal. Anyway, let's stay on topic. Let's focus.
This is topic. What you talking about?
All right, so... I was watching Hoodlum, but... The back part of the story of Hoodlum... was not, and I was impressed by the fact of who mentored him, like the whole part about Queenie, who was Stephanie St. Clair, she was important in the movie, she was a main character, but she was almost background. It was like they were telling.
Ooh, how did they get him to play him and not Forrest Whitaker?
I know, right? You're looking at it, they look alike, right?
Rowan Pope?
Yeah, Rowan Pope, yes. Okay. So when I'm watching the movie, I'm more intrigued by the story of Stephanie St. Clair. So if you're ever watching a movie, and this is the worst thing to do in a movie because you miss half the movie doing it, you start Googling people.
And you're not going to pause it because you're like, I'm just going to look real quick, but you're lying to yourself.
Next thing I know, I missed the whole movie of Hoodlum because I'm reading up on Stephanie St. Clair, right? Now, the thing that was like really stood out for me, Stephanie St. Clair was a female gangster during the Prohibition era.
Young.
And she ran Harlem. Like, there was no... She, nobody in Harlem was gonna fuck with her.
Wait, let's be 100% honest. She was young black female.
Yes, young black female. Important to say.
Against her.
Everything that should be an obstacle for her was not. It was non-factor with this bitch. That's why she, to me, that was a fucking cool ass bitch to me. I
just want to know why she's not talked about more. Honestly, after learning about her, I'm just like, what the fuck is wrong with everybody?
Yeah, like, and that's what I wanted to do, is I wanted to bring stories that were not so mainstream, because I am so tired of hearing El Chapo story. I am so tired of hearing Pablo. Did you just get on here and say El Chapo?
Who's El Chapo?
Shut the fuck up.
Oh, man. All of my ancestors rolling over in their graves because
Yes. No, he's God. But anyways, Stephanie St. Clair, not supposed to be as powerful as she is, right? Which to me says strength. First of all, off top.
Talk about strong, independent black women.
And what she'd been through from the moment she set foot in America.
The moment she was born, she had the odds against her.
Yeah. Like, well, yeah, to be honest with you, no, her, like, what I read about her, she's from the Guadeloupe, which is in the French West Indies. She spoke French. She learned English on the boat coming to America. And when she gets to America...
Which, she had to be close to a damn near genius, because English is the hardest language to learn.
Yes. She learned it on the boat, and the boat took a few months to get here. Back then, like, boats were what? They took a couple months, I want to say, from there to here.
Stank.
Yeah, can you imagine? But her life in Guadeloupe, they said, she was considered middle class. Her family was successful. But she had to venture out of Guadeloupe because her mom got sick, mm-hmm. and they needed money.
Single mom.
Her father, I think her father, it doesn't really say how her father died, but.
It doesn't talk much about him at all.
Significant. Like, I was looking for that, like, because
I lived forever.
And so she learns English on a boat. She gets here. People believe she was 14 when she got here. But the record says she was 22. This is back during a time where this is like early 1900s.
Right, your birth certificate.
You're not getting off a boat saying, here's my ID, here's my social security card, here's this, here's my immigration papers, here's my passport. None of that was a thing.
There's a questionnaire and you're answering questions.
And they wrote, I found the paperwork where it shows her entrance into Ellis Island, and it says 22 with a question mark next to it, which means they didn't really believe her, but she was very tall, statuesque. They said she had very intense eyes. I looked at the pictures. Yes, the fuck she did.
And I've seen some pictures of her very young. She was very mature looking for her age.
Yes. So
no matter what age she was.
They were like, I don't know. She looks kind of young, but she got it off or whatever. She ends up going to work for this as a maid, a live-in housekeeper in Canada. So her first job, she's working in, I'm not going to say rich white family because it doesn't say.
But let's be honest.
No, Canada was different than America, right? There was opportunity, I believe. I believe there was racism up there, but you had wealthy black families in Canada. And they had wealthy black families in America, too. So let's be honest. It was there, but not very rare. But I really think that this was my personal opinion, I believe it was a nasty little white boy doing this. But did you read about that where she was getting raped by the family's son?
Yep.
And so she had to get an exit strategy. She ends up in New York. She saves a little bit of money, goes to New York, and
that's some strength in its own right there, though.
She gets to New York. She meets this guy named
She's
Duke.
She's the epitome of not.
The internet says his name was Duke. I think Duke's a cool name, so maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I don't think that's what's important here. And I got caught up. Should I tell how I ended up on a wrong turn in this whole story?
Yeah, you should, because it's dumb and people need to know.
Okay. When I was reading, I was high, and I was actually practicing the telling the story on a podcast. I was recording it and see how it sounded, blah, blah, blah. So I read Cook, not Crook.
Duke the Cook, guys.
So in my narration, I'm picturing Stephanie St. Clair working at a diner with this guy, thinking he's a cook, who suddenly came out with the idea that he wanted to pimp her out, which is feasible. Because I've worked in restaurants a long time, and I have known some cooks to try some really outlandish game with some of the waitresses.
But you were wrong. Really wrong.
He was a small-time crook.
Because, you know, most people aren't small-time cooks anyways. Big deal.
No, there isn't. There is small-time cooks. You got big-time cooks. They got cooks to make money.
You know, they're like chefs. Line cook. Nobody calls them small-time cooks.
Taco Bell cook?
No, small-time cooks.
Can you even call fast food workers cooks?
No.
Okay.
They're microwave artists.
Yes. Can you put this in a fryer for 3 minutes?
No, obviously. Okay.
So my first opinion on Stephanie St. Clair was completely different. Because that. All right, I had to pause for a minute. My bad, bad. Okay.
Bad, bad.
Well, they don't know we paused because this could be like instantaneous.
They don't know. Now they know.
Why am I snitching on myself? Anyways, Stephanie St. Clair was not working at IHOP and her boyfriend Duke was not a cook. He wasn't a line cook. They weren't working drive through.
I don't think anybody was working drive through in the 20s, though.
Well, look. He tried to pimp her.
She was hot. And they were broke.
But boyfriend's got to be wild to try to get that off.
Maybe he was a cook.
You got to have a certain level of confidence. Not like, hey.
You were wrong the whole time he wasn't a cook. He was a cook.
He's that too. But listen, the whole time, you can't. How does a guy get that off in a relationship? Say, hey, look. Control, like, man. We got bills to pay.
It's a
and the most thing. Valuable item in this room is your coochie. You better go sell that shit.
It has to be control. It's possession.
Well,
it was his property, not his woman.
Stephanie was not having that shit at all. She stabbed him in the eye with a fork.
From the diner that they worked at.
Anyway.
You're going to be so confused about what is reality and fiction at this point.
Yes. Did they work in a diner? It's possible.
That might have been the front.
Because I know a lot of small-time crooks that still work at fucking restaurants.
You need that taxable shit.
She stabbed him in the eye, leaves him. She meets this guy named Ed. Ed's whole deal.
Be clear, though. He does not die.
He was alive. No, let me not skip that part. Also very significant. Because when she stabbed him in the eye, she felt like she had to flee the city. I guess Duke was dangerous. So she flees the city. She's on the bus. And none of this part is funny. The KKK yanked everybody off the bus, started killing black people, gang raping the women.
Burning them.
Yes. Hanging them, killing them, whatever. And this happened to her. She ends up getting gang raped by the KKK. Now this is what's tricky for me. I don't know what of this is embellished, what's true, some of this, because records are wild from that era. The source on this was her autobiography, right? So I would like to believe it because she doesn't come across as a liar. What happened after that is immediately after, while she's trying to flee the city and she gets gang raped, her ex-boyfriend gets killed in an unrelated incident in New York.
Because he's a small-time crook.
Yes, they're usually the first ones to get killed. So she comes back to New York, feels safe now. And because a part of me wonders if Duke told anybody that she was the one, she stabbed him in the eye. Because there's an ego part of a man. Like, when I was out there doing my thing in the streets, I've had girls do some physically abusive shit to me, and I ain't go to my homeboys and say, hey, this bitch just fucking pistol whooped me.
Fuck no.
So I don't see Duke going to his homies and say, hey, this girl stabbed me in the eye with a fork. He probably lied and said he was in the streets and, like, somebody tried him and he
probably rather say some 8-year-old boy did it than she did it.
Yeah. You definitely didn't want to say my woman fucked me up and stabbed me in the eye.
And then left me.
And got away. So she comes back to New York. She meets this guy named Ed. Small time black market drug dealer. I'm not talking. He wasn't into narcotics and illegal substances. He was supplying the stuff that black people did not really have access to in those times. Like penicillin.
They were being hood
medication. Yeah, they had to have a black market for it. So that was his hustle, and she got into that with him. Now her plan, she wanted to save $30,000 to start a policy banking program, or where she could do the street lotto. It was called the numbers game. Now, during this, they're stacking money together. Everything's going good. When you get money together, everything is great. So Ed, he's happy. Stephanie had bigger plans. She wanted to do the policy banking, and he didn't. He was like, no, we're making money, we're doing well. Why are we going to take a risk on something we don't know will work?
No future sight.
And you want to put a lot of money into this. All the money we've been saving for the past year, you want to put into that. He didn't want to do it. And plus that male ego didn't want him letting her make the rules and tell him what they're going to do. But Stephanie knew she was in charge, and she said, no, this is what I'm going to do. And so they get in a fight, and his dumb ass put hands on her. And she killed him. Somehow there was a struggle, and his head hit the table.
Let's say it how it happened. She cracked his skull.
She fucking bust his head open. Bust his head open.
That's not over exaggeration. From what it seems to be on all accounts, she busted his head open literally.
Yes. Yes, yes. She bust his head literally and he died. So she takes that money and she starts her policy banking. Now, from the different sources I read, it's like they all kind of agreed that hers was the biggest payout. So that's why everybody in Harlem wanted to play her numbers.
And they also trusted her the most.
Yeah, they felt like women have an advantage. The advantage they have is men don't feel like they're a threat.
Yeah, I feel you.
They don't. They're usually wrong in this. They didn't feel like Stephanie was a threat.
She was making about $250,000 annually because people didn't think she was a threat.
Yes. By the way, she's talking $250,000 in today's money, but...
No, $250,000 then.
Yeah, is that...
Annually. But in our money today...
Where's the source? Pull up where...
It's her autobiography.
Okay. So she's making all... $250,000 a year is a shitload of money in the 20s.
Yes.
Now...
She was the biggest bank in Harlem.
Let's paint the picture. This is the 20s. This is the Prohibition era. She's not supposed to be the boss. But this number racket was making so much money, she ran it. Nobody was challenging her. Nobody was, you know, she didn't need bodyguards and all this during the Prohibition era. Now, when Prohibition ended, you got Lucky Luciano, Dutch Schultz. This is the era, the Al Capone era.
This is the mafioso era.
Yeah, it was so glamorized. Like movies and movies and movies were made about this era and so many books and so much of that. And I can't believe that she was never mentioned more. Like when you actually hear her story.
Thank you, HBO, by the way, for bringing her to light.
Yes. But it never had success.
Or so. Just like, you know, the whole female superhero movement recently. Not a lot of success in that.
Shit. Do you know how much money Captain Marvel made?
Yeah, do you know how much money, like...
Do you know how much money Wonder Woman made?
Yeah, but in comparison. They made a lot of money, but...
Recently, but before that.
Yeah.
I think only now, and maybe the feminist movement has probably helped that a big deal. The
genuine feminist movement?
Yes. Yes, I don't care about any of the movements. I don't care. I'm not moving. I'm lazy.
I'm not about it.
Why does everything got to be called a movement?
I don't know. Bowel movement is a thing, too.
Yeah.
I'm okay with those.
Oh, yeah, I guess. But anyways, during this misogynistic era, she runs Harlem. And when Prohibition ends, you start got people coming for her territory because now they're feeling that loss on their liquor money. And so they're like, okay, Harlem is making a lot of money in numbers. We need a piece of that. Somebody said to Dutch Schultz, who was a Jewish gangster during that time, who was feared everywhere, did not care about murder, did not care about this. And his thing is he had a shitload of police working for him. A lot of crooked cops.
Crooked and straight police because of fear.
Yeah. And back then, that was kind of his way, is he was going to come at you in the streets with the violence, and he was also going to press your organization with the police, right? So that, and his tactic was super successful. It's what made him rich and powerful during that era. But he was coming for Stephanie. He was coming for her. Now, this is where Stephanie was a bad bitch. She would not bow down. She went and hired Ellsworth Bumpy Johnson as her bodyguard, 1924. And he starts working for her. He's her muscle. He kept things, because he was not scared of violence either.
He was a mean motherfucker.
The Italian gangsters pressed her. He pressed them. Right?
And also during this time, she's like doing the whole like newspaper posting thing.
Yes,
and
yes.
Exposing police corruption and letting black people know they got
this rights. Is what led to that. And yeah. So she made it political. And Jeez. Made it... She
protected herself with the paper.
Yes, like anybody that, like, when she was against violence, she was like, let me put the people on my side. And it worked.
A woman against violence hires a man to be violent, but only one man to be violent for her.
Yeah.
But I mean, she's killing people.
He was a scary guy.
She's in love with. So,
yeah. Now, let's talk about that for a minute. The relationship with Bumpy Johnson and her. I don't know what to believe. There was a lot of people saying they were romantically involved.
I've read things that say that they were romantic. I've read things that said they were brother sisterly.
Yes.
I've read things that said that they barely even got along.
Is that important in the story?
I don't think so, honestly.
I think it is.
I just don't think it is, because if I don't know which one is the actual truth, I don't know what impact it could possibly have.
But since this happened in the 20s, we can use our imaginations here.
We can make anything up right now.
Yeah, we can make it up.
It was her dad.
They didn't
There's work her dad. At IHOP. We found her dad.
They didn't work at IHOP together.
Yeah, right? They didn't work at IHOP. No diner.
Okay.
He was not a cook. He's bumpy. Get that bumpy ass head. Maybe that's what she was into.
Leave Roman Pope alone. Anyways, listen, Bumpy was a scary dude. And the reason I say it might be important and it might explain a lot during the relationship, they also had during the end, they had a somewhat toxic relationship.
Yeah.
Because she didn't agree with his methods.
She hired him for the methods, but didn't
think, didn't,
didn't think had they guilt had to after. Continue, you know.
Right. She was, and that what makes her fantasizing is made her an awesome character in history is because she had a heart. Like, she was
a genuine, she had empathy. Human.
Yeah. But she was still cold-hearted and a lot of other shit, but she felt sorrow
that
for other people.
I think why I like her so much, because I get that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm living my life trying to be a decent human, but also, you know, huge emotionally disconnected and kind of bitchy all the time. But do what you gotta do, right?
Exactly.
Survival.
Chad, bitch! Anyways, welcome to the Bruce Almighty Podcast. I don't know. What makes it?
I don't know. It's just funny. Just say it.
Podcast?
Just do it how you're doing it, man.
Because we're just talking shit! Okay, first and foremost, I want to make a disclaimer. Do not take anything you hear on here too serious. It ain't that serious, folks. Fucking podcast, entertainment while you're driving, shitting, whatever you're doing, right? You may want to masturbate to the sultry sounds of what you hear.
Most
I have a good phone sex voice.
It's you. It's all you.
It is me. All right. Anyways, let me introduce my new co-host, Lola the Nightmare.
Long time listener, first time co-host.
First time co-host. I don't know. Depending on how the day goes, might be last time co-host because she might end up in a trunk. She might end up in a trunk. Anyways, if you're a member of the Almighty Psychos, the Almighty's Army of Psychos, make sure you join us on Discord, all that, social media. And, you know, I actually made a Twitter for the Bruce Almighty podcast.
Hasn't followed me yet?
I haven't used it yet because I'm not good at this shit. I haven't, like, the things I should be doing to make this podcast successful, I haven't started doing it yet. So
I realize that now.
Like, I need help, folks.
You need an alarm clock for what?
I do. And because every time you call me, I'm sleeping in too late. And I'm usually
up really early. Apparently, if I offer tacos, your ass is up.
Yeah, you said tacos, I was up. If you want to follow that, it's Podcast Bruce. Or, wait, I made a couple of them, and I didn't know which name it was.
This man right here.
Yeah.
I'm unprepared.
Story of my life.
Like all men.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
What do they call it? If it's misogynistic for men, what is it for women?
Is it something I should know?
Yeah, something you said. You just said, oh, it's all men are like that. That's very, you're generalizing that. Us.
I definitely didn't.
Cancel culture is coming for you. In defense of me. Yeah,
I did whatever. Not. That's, you have no proof.
I do. Anyways. Look, let's keep it all the way 100. Like, I don't know what the fuck this podcast is going to be. I wanted it to be a true crime comedy podcast. And we might just be here with the vibes. Talking a little shit. It's a pod e-cast. So you don't know what you're going to get. Like,
something entertaining.
Something to entertain you idiots. Well, I don't want to call them listeners idiots because I think they're pretty smart if they listen to us. But if you appreciate our sense of humor, our take on stuff in the world, you know, things I don't really want to comment on or right now I wasn't going to say anything about Kobe, but some things I just want to say rest in peace, Kobe. Because right now it's pretty emotional for me. Condolences to his family. I don't want this going to a dark place early in the podcast. That's not the direction I want to go. But that's been the heaviest thing on my mind. And if this is your first time listening, and if we put this out in a timely fashion, then I hope...
You might hear this in a month from now.
Yeah, it might. They'll be like, man, that was months ago. No, like, we're really trying to do this right, so I'm trying to record properly. If the audio quality isn't up to par, hey, if you guys listen, give me them stream numbers. We can afford some really good equipment.
We're doing this for y'all at the end of the day.
Yes, yes, yes. All right. We need a, you know, let's be honest. It comes down to the money. All right? Comes down to the money. And we're not going to ask any of you for a dime. You know what you can do to help us? Share this shit. Tell your friends. Anyways.
Make them give us dimes.
Yeah, make us give them dimes. No, if we get listened, we get dimes. Dimes. Literally dimes.
I just go cry on a bag of money.
You know.
I just go cry on a bag of money.
Ooh, I love this
little
thing.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, shut up. Nobody asked you, all right? Anyways, welcome. Let's see. We wanted to start... I don't want to just jump into the topic because what if we get into the topic and we don't like it? We're like, fuck that shit. We wasted 2 hours talking about some shit.
I feel like we wasted 2 hours talking about nothing, though.
We already done that. Like, I swear to God, if we were recording this from the moment that she got here, it may have been more entertaining because the shit we talk about when the microphone's turned off.
That barbershop talks a lot better.
Yeah. Anyways, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Okay, one more time for the kids at home, just in case.
Welcome. Yeah, I feel like I should say welcome.
Welcome.
Because this is the first episode of Season 2 of the Bruce Almighty podcast.
And also, you're welcome.
Yes. All right, so we want to do this thing. It's called Booze Clues. We're going to tell... I love true crime. I don't know about you. It's like, that is my jam, from documentaries to podcasts to...
my lady jam.
You know, almost all the media... that I watch is true crime related. I love gangster movies.
When I can't find shit to watch, I'm watching true crime.
Documentaries about how they're smuggling drugs into the country. Serial killers. Like, that's my shit.
Real life psychological thrillers, man.
Yeah, and the thing that's great, in my lifetime, I've lived some of the shit that I see in those, but I still watch other people's shit.
Do you ever just watch it and you're like, man, how could that ever happen? And you think about it and you're like, oh yeah, that's how.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, this is also a very non-judgmental podcast. We don't have, we're not trying to put morals and values on anybody. Listen to the shit and realize this is entertainment. Like, we're living in a time where everybody gets fucking offended, right? Sometimes you should get offended.
Fake offended. Fake real offended.
Yeah, fake offended. Real offended. Whatever. Anyways, this is not just you're safe here. I want you to know you're safe. You say what the fuck you want, because guess what I can do? I can edit it out later.
This is your safe place.
We can edit it later, okay? If I say edit point, write whatever number you see down here, okay? Edit point. All right. I was, for a minute, I didn't know what story I wanted to do first. I didn't know who, because, like, when it comes to true crime, you can go forever and find awesome stories to talk about.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I don't know about you, but I've always been interested in the street politics of Harlem. I've never stepped foot in New York. I love Mace. I love Cameron. I don't know. I started there. But, like, when it came to movies and all that, like, Harlem was always legendary in these stories. And I mean, I know people from Harlem.
Every kind of movie about crime has some foot in Harlem.
Somehow, some way, there's all. It's like Kevin. Something Harlem is like the Kevin Bacon of the crime world.
Yeah, you know, Seven Spaces, Kevin Bacon.
Yes, it all ties back to Harlem. Anyways, well, I ran across this story. This is how it happened. I'm watching a movie called Hoodlum, and it was about Bumpy Johnson. I started watching this again because I was watching Forrest Whitaker's Godfather of Harlem. That show is amazing, and it's the story of Bumpy Johnson, who was pretty much the kingpin of Harlem. He ran Harlem. He was like, and the thing he was so well known for is white gangsters respected and feared him. He lived by the same, he believed the same codes they did.
He looked like such a nice old man, though.
Yeah, but if you read his criminal record, he was not a nice old man. Yeah,
he's like such a sweetheart.
You know, he kind of looks like Benson.
I feel
you. He kind of looked like Benson. Anyways, what's the Olivia Pope's dad's name?
Oh, shoot. Google?
What was his name? Oh, Jesus, man. He was amazing in Scandal. Anyway, let's stay on topic. Let's focus.
This is topic. What you talking about?
All right. So, I was watching Hoodlum, but the back part of the story of Hoodlum was not, and I was impressed by the fact of who mentored him, like the whole part about Queenie, who was Stephanie St. Clair, she was important in the movie, she was a main character, but she was almost background. It was like they were telling.
Ooh, how did they get him to play him and not Forrest Whitaker?
I know, right? You're looking at it, they look alike, right?
Rowan Pope?
Yeah, Rowan Pope, yes. Okay. So when I'm watching the movie, I'm more intrigued by the story of Stephanie St. Clair. So if you're ever watching a movie, and this is the worst thing to do in a movie because you miss half the movie doing it, you start Googling people.
And you're not going to pause it because you're like, I'm just going to look real quick, but you're lying to yourself.
Next thing I know, I missed the whole movie of Hoodlum because I'm reading up on Stephanie St. Clair, right? Now, the thing that was like really stood out for me, Stephanie St. Clair was a female gangster during the Prohibition era.
Young.
And she ran Harlem. Like, there was nobody in Harlem was going to fuck with her.
Wait, let's be 100% honest. She was young, black female.
Yes, young, black female. Important to say.
Against her.
Everything that should be an obstacle for her was not. It was non-factor with this bitch. That's why she, to me, that was a fucking cool-ass bitch to me. I
just want to know why she's not talked about more. Honestly, after learning about her, I'm just like, what the fuck is wrong with everybody?
Yeah, like, and that's what I wanted to do is I wanted to bring stories that were not so mainstream. Because I am so tired of hearing El Chapo story. I am so tired of hearing Pablo. Have you? Did you just get on here and say El Chapo?
Who's El Chapo?
Shut the fuck up.
Oh man, all of my ancestors rolling over in their graves because
No, he's God. But anyways, Stephanie St. Clair not supposed to be as powerful as she is, right? Which to me says strength. First of all, off top,
talk about strong, independent Black woman
and what she's been through from the moment she set foot in America.
The moment she was born, she had the odds against her.
Yeah, like, well, yeah, to be honest with you, no, her, like, what I read about her, she's from the Guadeloupe, which is in the French West Indies. She spoke French. She learned English on the boat coming to America. And when she gets to America...
Which, by the way, I mean, she had to be close to a damn near genius, because English is the hardest language to learn.
Yes. She learned it on the boat. And the boat took a few months to get here. Back then, like, boats were what? They took a couple months, I want to say, from there to here.
Stank.
Yeah, can you imagine? But her life in Guadeloupe, they said, she was considered middle class. Her family was successful, but she had to venture out of Guadeloupe because her mom got sick. Mm-hmm. And they needed money.
Single mom.
Her father, I think her father, it doesn't really say how her father died, but
it doesn't talk much about him at all.
Significant. Like, I was looking for that, like, because
I looked forever.
And so she learns English on a boat. She gets here. People believe she was 14 when she got here, but the record says she was 22. This is back during a time where this is like early 1900s.
Right, your birth certificate.
You're not getting off a boat saying, here's my ID, here's my social security card, here's this, here's my immigration papers, here's my passport. None of that was a thing.
There's a questionnaire and you're answering questions.
And they wrote, I found the paperwork where it shows her entrance into Ellis Island, and it says 22 with a question mark next to it, which means they didn't really believe her, but she was very tall, statuesque. They said she had very intense eyes. I looked at the pictures. Yes, the fuck she did.
And I've seen some pictures of her very young. She was very mature looking for her age.
Yes. So
no matter what age she was.
They were like, I don't know. She looks kind of young, but she got it off or whatever. She ends up going to work for this as a maid, a live-in housekeeper in Canada. So her first job, she's working in, I'm not going to say rich white family because it doesn't say.
But let's be honest.
No, Canada was different than America, right? There was opportunity, I believe there was racism up there, but you had wealthy Black families in Canada. And they had wealthy Black families in America, too. So let's be honest. It was there, but not very rare. But I really think that this was my personal opinion, I believe it was a nasty little white boy doing this. But did you read about that where she was getting raped by the family's son?
Yep.
And so she had to get an exit strategy. She ends up in New York. She saves a little bit of money, goes to New York, and
that's some strength in its own right there, though.
She gets to New York. She meets this guy named
She's
Duke.
She's the epitome of not ever.
The internet says his name was Duke. I think Duke's a cool name, so maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I don't think that's what's important here.
It's a nickname.
And I got caught up. Should I tell how I ended up on a wrong turn in this whole story?
Yeah, you should, because it's dumb and people need to know.
Okay. When I was reading, I was high, and I was actually practicing the telling the story on a podcast. I was recording it and see how it sounded, blah, blah, blah. So I read Cook, not Crook.
Duke the Cook, guys.
So in my narration, I'm picturing Stephanie St. Clair working at a diner with this guy, thinking he's a cook, who suddenly came out with the idea that he wanted to pimp her out. Which is feasible, because I've worked in restaurants a long time, and I have known some cooks to try some really outlandish game with some of the waitresses.
But you were wrong. Really wrong.
He was a small-time crook.
Because, you know, most people aren't small-time cooks anyways. Big dumb.
No, there is small-time cooks. You got big-time cooks. They got cooks to make money.
You know, they're like chefs. fry cook. You know, they have
line cook.
Nobody calls them small time cooks.
Taco Bell cook.
No, small time cooks.
Can you even call fast food workers cooks?
No.
Okay.
They're microwave artists.
Yes. Can you put this in a fryer for 3 minutes?
No, obviously.
Okay. So my first opinion on Stephanie St. Clair was completely different. Because that. All right, I had to pause for a minute. My bad, bad. Okay.
Bad, bad.
Well, they don't know we paused because this could be like instantaneous.
They don't know. Now they know.
Why am I snitching on myself? Anyways, Stephanie St. Clair was not working at IHOP and her boyfriend Duke was not a cook. He wasn't a line cook. They weren't working drive through.
I don't think anybody was working drive through in the 20s. So.
Well, look, he tried to pimp her.
She was hot. And they were broke.
But boyfriend's got to be wild to try to get that off.
Maybe he was a cook.
You got to have a certain level of confidence. Not like, hey.
You were wrong the whole time he wasn't a cook. He was a cook.
He's that too. But listen, the whole time. You can't. How does a guy get that off in a relationship? Say, hey, look,
control,
like
man.
We got bills to pay,
it's a
and the most
thing.
Valuable item in this room is your coochie. You better go sell that shit.
It has to be control. It's possession.
Well,
it was his property, not his woman.
Stephanie was not having that shit at all. She stabbed him in the eye with a fork
from the diner that they worked at.
Anyway,
you're gonna be so confused about what is reality and fiction at this point.
Yes, did they work in a diner? It's possible.
That might have been the front.
Because I know a lot of small time crooks that still work at fucking restaurants.
You need that taxable shit.
She stabbed him in the eye, leaves him. She meets this guy named Ed. Ed's whole deal.
Be clear though, he does not die.
He was alive. No, let me not skip that part. Also very significant.
Because
when she stabbed him in the eye, she felt like she had to flee the city. I guess Duke was dangerous. So she flees the city. She's on the bus. And none of this part is funny. The KKK yanked everybody off the bus, started killing black people, gang raping the women.
Burning them.
Yes. Hanging them, killing them, whatever. And this happened to her. She ends up getting gang raped by the KKK. Now this is what's tricky for me. I don't know what of this is embellished, what's true, some of this, because records are wild from that era. The source on this was her autobiography, right? So I would like to believe it because she doesn't come across as a liar. What happened after that is immediately after, while she's trying to flee the city and she gets gang raped, her ex-boyfriend gets killed in an unrelated incident in New York.
Because he's a small-time crook.
Yes, they're usually the first ones to get killed. So she comes back to New York, feels safe now. And because a part of me wonders if Duke told anybody that she was the one, she stabbed him in the eye. Because there's an ego part of a man. Like, when I was out there doing my thing in the streets, I've had girls do some physically abusive shit to me, and I ain't go to my homeboys and say, hey, this bitch just fucking pistol whooped me.
Fuck no.
So I don't see Duke going to his homies and say, hey, this girl stabbed me in the eye with a fork. He probably lied and said he was in the streets and... like somebody tried him and
he'd probably rather say some 8-year-old boy did it than she did it.
Yeah. You definitely didn't want to say my woman fucked me up and stabbed me in the eye.
And then left me.
And got away. So she comes back to New York. She meets this guy named Ed. Small time black market drug dealer. I'm not talking. He wasn't into narcotics and illegal substances. He was supplying the stuff that black people did not really have access to in those times. Like penicillin.
They were being hood
medication.
Doctors.
Yeah, they were. They had to have a black market for it. So that was his hustle, and she got into that with him. Now her plan, she wanted to sell save $30,000 to start a policy banking program, or where she could do the street lotto. It was called the numbers game. Now, during this, they're stacking money together. Everything's going good. When you get money together, everything is great. So Ed, he's happy. Stephanie had bigger plans. She wanted to do the policy banking, and he didn't. He was like, no, we're making money, we're doing well. Why are we going to take a risk on something we don't know will work?
No future sight.
And you want to put a lot of money into this. All the money we've been saving for the past year, you want to put into that. He didn't want to do it. And plus that male ego didn't want him letting her make the rules and tell him what they're going to do. But Stephanie knew she was in charge, and she said, no, this is what I'm going to do. And so they get in a fight, and his dumb ass put hands on her. And she killed him. Somehow there was a struggle, and his head hit the table.
Let's say it how it happened. She cracked his skull.
She fucking bust his head open. Bust his head open.
That's an over-exaggeration from what it seems to be on all accounts. She busted his head open literally.
Yes. Yes, yes. She bust his head literally and he died. So she takes that money and she starts her policy banking. Now, from the different sources I read, it's like they all kind of agreed that hers was the biggest payout. So that's why everybody in Harlem wanted to play her numbers.
And they also trusted her the most.
Yeah, they felt like women have an advantage. The advantage they have is men don't feel like they're a threat.
Yeah, I feel you.
They don't. They're usually wrong in this. They didn't feel like Stephanie was a threat.
She was making about $250,000 annually because people didn't think she was a threat.
Yes. By the way, she's talking $250,000 in today's money, but...
No, $250,000 then.
Yeah, is that
annually? But in our money today,
where's the source? Pull up where
it's her autobiography.
Okay, so she's making all $250,000 a year is a shitload of money in the '20s.
Yes.
Now
she was the biggest bank in Harlem.
Let's paint the picture. This is the '20s. This is the Prohibition era. She's not supposed to be the boss, but this number racket was making so much money. She ran it. Nobody was challenging her. Nobody was. You know, she didn't need bodyguards and all this during the Prohibition era. Now, when Prohibition ended, you got Lucky Luciano, Dutch Schultz. This is the era, the Al Capone era.
This is the mafioso era.
Yeah, it was so glamorized. Like movies and movies and movies were made about this era and so many books and so much of that. And I can't believe that she was never mentioned more. Like when you actually hear her story.
Thank you, HBO, by the way, for bringing her to light.
Yes. But it never had success.
Or so. Just like, you know, the whole female superhero movement recently. Not a lot of success in that.
Shit. Do you know how much money Captain Marvel made?
Yeah, do you know how much money, like...
Do you know how much money Wonder Woman made?
Yeah, but in comparison. They made a lot of money, but...
Recently, but before that.
Yeah.
I think only now, and maybe the feminist movement has probably helped that a big deal.
The genuine feminist movement?
Yes. Yes, I don't care about any of the movements. I don't care. I'm not moving. I'm lazy.
I'm not about it.
Why does everything got to be called a movement?
I don't know. Bowel movement is a thing, too.
Yeah.
I'm okay with those.
Oh, yeah, I guess. But, anyways, during this misogynistic era, she runs Harlem. And when Prohibition ends, you start got people coming for her territory because now they're feeling that loss on their liquor money. And so they're like, okay, Harlem is making a lot of money in numbers. We need a piece of that. Somebody step to it. Dutch Schultz, who was a Jewish gangster during that time, who was feared everywhere, did not care about murder, did not care about this. And his thing is he had a shitload of police working for him. Mm-hmm. A lot of crooked cops.
Crooked and straight police because of fear.
Yeah. And back then, that was kind of his way, is he was going to come at you in the streets with the violence, and he was also going to press your organization with the police, right? So that, and his tactic was super successful. It's what made him rich and powerful during that era. But he was coming for Stephanie. He was coming for her. Now, this is where Stephanie was a bad bitch. She would not bow down. She went and hired Ellsworth Bumpy Johnson as her bodyguard, 1924. And he starts working for her. He's her muscle. He kept things, because he was not scared of violence either.
He was a mean motherfucker.
The Italian gangsters pressed her. He pressed them. Right?
And also during this time, she's like doing the whole like newspaper posting thing.
Yes,
and
yes.
Exposing police corruption and letting black people know they got
this rights. Is what led to that. And yeah. So she made it political. And jeez. Made it... She
protected herself with the paper.
Yes, like anybody that, like, when she was against violence, she was like, let me put the people on my side. And it worked.
A woman against violence hires a man to be violent, but only one man to be violent for her.
Yeah.
But I mean, she's killing people.
He was a scary guy.
She's in love with. So,
yeah. Now, let's talk about that for a minute. The relationship with Bumpy Johnson and her. I don't know what to believe. There was a lot of people saying they were romantically involved.
I've read things that say that they were romantic. I've read things that said they were brother sisterly.
Yes.
I've read things that said that they barely even got along.
Is that important in the story?
I don't think so, honestly.
I think it is.
I just don't think it is, because if I don't know which one is the actual truth, I don't know what impact it could possibly have.
But since this happened in the 20s, we can use our imaginations here.
We can make anything up right now.
Yeah, we can make it up.
It was her dad.
They didn't
There's work her dad. At IHOP. We found her dad.
They didn't work at IHOP together.
Yeah, right? They didn't work at IHOP. No diner.
Okay.
He was not a cook. He's bumpy. With that bumpy ass head. Maybe that's what she was into.
Leave Roman Pope alone. Anyways, listen, Bumpy was a scary dude. And the reason I say it might be important and it might explain a lot during the relationship, they also had during the end, they had a somewhat toxic relationship.
Yeah.
Because she didn't agree with his methods.
She hired him for the methods, but didn't
think, didn't,
didn't think
had
they
guilt
had to
after.
Continue, you know.
Right. She was... And that what makes her fantasizing is made her an awesome character in history is because she had a heart. Like she was
a genuine,
she had empathy.
Human.
Yeah. But she was still cold hearted and a lot of other shit, but she felt sorrow for other people.
That might be why I like her so much, because I get that.
Yeah.
Like I'm living my life trying to be a decent human, but also, you know, huge emotionally disconnected and kind of bitchy all the time. Do what you gotta do, right?
Exactly.
Survival.